This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
The United Nations Children's Fund reports that hundreds of thousands of children in South Sudan are severely malnourished. The agency says the situation is getting worse as the country's conflict drags on.
That's Lisa Schlein reporting from Geneva. Details coming up.
Also, after Wednesday's municipal elections in South Africa, the African National Congress has seen its support weaken. And an unprecedented wave of protest is going on against longtime President Robert Mugabe in Zimbabwe.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, there were dueling statements this week from two men who both claim to be the leader of Nigerian militant sect Boko Haram. The apparent leadership struggle has sparked concerns of an ideological split that could lead to an upsurge in violence in northeast Nigeria and the Lake Chad region. Chika Adua has the story from Abuja.
In its weekly online publication, the Islamic State militant group named Abu Musab al-Barnawi as its governor of Boko Haram. The article didn't say so explicitly, but the implication was that al-Barnawi had replaced Abubakar Shekau, the bombastic preacher who has led the group since 2009. Al-Barnawi has also reportedly released an audio statement attacking Shekau, according to the regional news service Sahara Reporters. A man claiming to be Shekau responded to this so-called attempted coup with a 10-minute audio statement of his own, briefly posted on YouTube before it was taken down. In the statement, Shekau reasserted his authority over Boko Haram and said that al-Barnawi, a longtime member of the group, is trying to stir up conflict. Khalid Aliyu is an official in the umbrella body of Islamic organizations in Nigeria, Jamaatu Nasrul Islam.
He's so confused, and he was showing sign of weakness. It's a sign of the end of the whole saga. That is one. Two, it's a sign of a defeat also. It's also a sign of loss of grips, power and control of the insurgency itself. Therefore, and it shows a crack in the organization of the insurgency.
He says Boko Haram has been overpowered by the army. In fact, Boko Haram has lost most of the territory it once held, although it still carries out attacks in northeast Nigeria and across nearby borders. Aliyu speculates that this may be why the Islamic State is shifting the power away from Shekau in an attempt to raise the profile of Boko Haram again. But there are fears that the power struggle between al-Barnawi and Shekau could lead to a spike in violence.
There will be clash over leadership if it is true that al-Barnawi says he's now his new leader and Shekau says, yes, I'm still the Shekau, you know. So there will be clashes, you know, there's two functions now, so they will be fighting each other.
Bulus Mungo Park is a member of a Nigerian vigilante group. These groups have been key allies of the Nigerian military, helping to monitor and fight Boko Haram units. Mungo Park says he battled Boko Haram in his hometown of Chibok, where Boko Haram kidnapped almost 300 schoolgirls in 2014. Al-Barnawi is said by some to be the son of Boko Haram founder Mohamed Yusuf, who was killed in police custody in 2009. But that's up for debate. Mungo Park says he remembers Yusuf very well.
I know Mama Yusuf, and I don't think he has a grown-up child of that age.
What is also up for debate is the actual level of cooperation between the Islamic State and Boko Haram. The Islamic State accepted Boko Haram's pledge of allegiance last year, but many security analysts say there does not seem to be a coordinated military strategy between the two groups. Professor Mukhtar Bunza is a Nigerian historian who has followed Boko Haram.
From the beginning, Boko Haram paid their allegiance to IS, I think both Boko Haram and the IS, each one of them, is looking for recognition, would want to have more followers.
Still, an attempt by Islamic State to reshuffle Boko Haram's leadership could point to deepening operational ties to come. Chika Odua for VOA News, Abuja.
Two soldiers in Ivory Coast have been sentenced to 10 years in prison in connection with a deadly Al-Qaeda attack in the beach resort town of Grand Bassam last March. Emilia Yub has more from Abidjan.
The trial was swift. The day it opened, a military court in Abidjan found two Ivorian soldiers, Zanga Zoumana Koulibaly and Brice Touré, guilty of criminal conspiracy and failing to report a suspected terrorist to police. They were charged with criminal conspiracy for having met a man known as Sam, who is suspected of having been the driver of the car that Al-Qaeda operatives used to carry out the March terrorist attack in Grand Bassam, which left 19 people dead. They were also charged for failing to report that man to authorities. The two soldiers argued they were innocent and said they didn't know that Sam was involved in terrorist activities. Sam is still awaiting his own trial. The soldier's defense lawyer, Raoul Goibi, denounced the sentencing of his client as illogical, since Sam hasn't yet been convicted of terrorism activities. I'm going to appeal this decision because I want it overturned with the highest rigor by the Supreme Court, the lawyer said. More than 80 people have been arrested by Ivorian authorities in connection with terrorist attack in Mali, Burkina Faso, and Ivory Coast over the past year. Al-Qaeda and the Islamic Maghreb has claimed responsibility for all three attacks. Emily Yob for VOA News in Abidjan.
The United Nations Children's Fund reports that hundreds of thousands of children in South Sudan are severely malnourished. UNICEF says the situation is getting worse as conflict drags on. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Millions of people in South Sudan are suffering from growing food shortages due to conflict and rising prices for increasingly scarce commodities. But the UN Children's Fund says children are hit hardest by this catastrophic situation. UNICEF says it has treated 120,000 South Sudanese children under five for severe malnutrition in the past 6 months. It says this is an increase of nearly 50% over the same period last year and more than 150% increase compared to 2014. UNICEF spokesman Christophe Bourirac says his agency now plans to treat more than 250,000 severely malnourished children this year. In some areas, he says, up to a third of all children aren't getting enough food.
Seven out of the country's 10 states have reached the emergency threshold of 15.15% global acute malnutrition. While in northern Bahr el Ghazal, the malnutrition rate is 33%.
Chalice McDonough is World Food Programme spokeswoman for East Africa. She says one of the most heartbreaking sights is that of a malnourished child.
When you're used to seeing children, they have a light in their eyes, and a malnourished child, when they're very, very ill, that light will have gone out. But the listlessness and the lack of energy is the one that really breaks your heart. I've seen children that can't even lift their head up off of their mother's shoulder, and they'll be much smaller than you would expect for a child that age.
McDonough warns lifelong damage to physical and mental development can result if a child under two is malnourished for an extended length of time. She says babies who do not get the right nutrition will not be able to live up to their full potential as adults, even if they survive. Aid groups have been trying to help feed the millions of South Sudanese left hungry because of their country's conflict, but relief workers face tough challenges of insecurity, remote locations, and often impassable roads. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Thank you.
You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiya Suhib, 15 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. A UN report indicates that hundreds of thousands of children in South Sudan are severely malnourished. And with dueling statements, two men now claim to be the leader of the militant sect, Boko Haram. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
South Africa's ruling party has suffered its biggest municipal election losses since the end of apartheid in 1994. The Associated Press reports that with 95% of the votes counted from Wednesday's elections, the African National Congress has seen its support weaken. The opposition Democratic Alliance Party has gained support because of continuing economic problems. The ruling party has also been hurt by scandals surrounding President Jacob Zuma. The AP says the vote is still too close to call in Johannesburg and the Swane metropolitan area around Pretoria. The ANC has lost power to the Democratic Alliance in Nelson Mandela Bay. That municipality is located in Eastern Cape Province and includes Port Elizabeth and several towns. Overall, the ANC has received about 54% of Wednesday's vote. That's down from 62% in 2011. The Democratic Alliance has received 26%.
While the major election battle in South Africa was between the ruling African National Congress and the Democratic Alliance, almost 200 tiny fringe political organizations also had candidates on the ballot. Analysts say that's evidence of a fractured political environment. One of the new political parties is the Build a Cohesive Society, or BOX, party. Darren Taylor tells us more about it in the final part of his series on South Africa's municipal elections.
People wearing white T-shirts bearing the words "Enough is enough" in black letters gather on a field in Soweto, the huge township near Johannesburg. Among them is a small white woman with long blonde hair, also wearing a T-shirt and jeans. There's laughter as she approaches three men in green and yellow ANC caps.
Thank you very much.
We'd really like your support. Consider voting for another party. No, don't vote for the big ones, vote for the small ones, because I believe we work harder. And with time.
Linda Woodendahl is a former businesswoman and opposition politician. She says she established the Build a Cohesive Society in South Africa, or BACS party, in response to the anger in the country's political sphere. The build-up to the local government elections saw fist fights in parliament, violent community protests, and candidates murdered across the country. Woodendahl says BACS wants to bring dignity and humanity back into local politics.
The bigger parties are angry and they clearly contesting for large spaces, and I think they themselves are the ones that are creating their own problems. We're trying to be that bridge in the middle. You know, we're hoping that with time we'll find a way to collaborate and get people to work together. We think if we are the voice of reason when everybody else is being unreasonable and angry, that will work to the benefit of all South Africans. So I think
the BACS philosophy is to depoliticize municipalities, to put independent experts and not politicians in charge of basic services such as water, electricity, and housing.
Okay, do you have membership form? Can I have two, please?
Can we form here, please?
BACS officials, including Mpo Legofe, sign up new members. She says most town councils are incompetent because the politicians who lead them reward their supporters who aren't qualified to do the work with lucrative tenders. Legofe insists BACS will fire all corrupt municipal officials and replace them with clean and competent public servants.
Get people who are very professional, who know the industry better.
I mean, you've got your graduates who are unemployed currently. Bring them into space. They've got those expertise and skills. Bring as well monitoring systems that would make sure that these people don't do the same things that were done previously by other officials.
Wendell says if her party eventually gets a chance in local government, it'll use economists and entrepreneurs not affiliated to political parties to create jobs in a country where unemployment is at an all-time high.
We say free education, free healthcare. That can only happen and be supported in a robust economy. And we think that starts at the grassroots level through building better hubs for employment closer to where people live. And so.
At a taxi rank in Soweto, Wendell says she's amazed at the reception Bax has received, especially in the townships around Johannesburg.
People would, you know, feed us and bring us into their homes and, you know, empty their pockets to support the party. At times we haven't been able to, you know, to put our logos on things and we've just had our white t-shirts. It's actually been inspiring for us.
But Legofe says members of other parties, especially the ANC, have sometimes insulted her while she's been campaigning for Bax. With a stern look on her bespectacled face, she says she's not intimidated.
It's important we get aggression, it's important we get negativity. That builds us as activists as well, so that we can improve and understand where people are coming. What's the point of us working without these people? We need them so that we can be able to deliver what they want, exactly what they want.
At a bar in the Katlehong township, Bax official Simon Machlaha says canvassing for an unknown party hasn't been easy.
Firstly, you know, they'll laugh at me.
Machlaha says some people get ugly when he criticizes their political favorites. He tells how a man in a yellow ANC t-shirt recently stormed upon him.
You know what he said to me? He said, yeah, I've heard that you are with Bax now. Yeah, f*** you know, those kind of things. I always get them.
Doesn't it discourage you?
No, it doesn't discourage me because I know what I want and what I want for my people.
A bare-chested man, sweating and his face streaked with dirt, digs a ditch in Soweto. He says he'll consider supporting Bax because the ANC's promises are all lies.
I'm 30 years now, I can't see any progress. My parents are still living the same way. They're gonna tell you about free education and then you vote and then there's nothing like that.
The man's reaction encourages Wendell.
People really are not interested in some of the politics that we're hearing right now. They really just want the issues to be addressed. And they don't care who deals with it. They're just somebody that's gonna action it and get it done.
A crowd gathers at a municipal office in Soweto to complain about shoddy homes built by the ANC-led council. In the midst of the throng, Wendell says she's confident that Bax will build on its work during this election campaign to allow it to be a much more formidable presence in the national poll in 2019. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
Italian police say they've broken up an alleged migrant smuggling ring in the southern part of the country. They say the man accused of being the ring leader is a suspected Tunisian jihadist. Italy is the main destination for migrants trying to reach Europe by crossing the Mediterranean. Many hire smugglers and attempt the journey in unsafe vessels. Reporter Josephine McKenna is following developments. From Rome, she spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua about the alleged human smuggling ring.
Here we have a suspected Tunisian jihadist among eight foreign nationals arrested on Friday. Police saying that they've broken up this alleged human trafficking ring in the region of Campania, which is around the city of Naples. And the arrested people are suspected of criminal association related to illegal immigration and the falsification of documents. They are alleged to have arranged for migrants from the Maghreb to have fake labour contracts and pay slips from compliant textile companies that enabled them to obtain residential permits here in Italy. The Tunisian is also under investigation for criminal association related to international terrorism, as well as several other people. The police are alleging that the Tunisian tried to radicalize and express his Islamist extremism via social networks, and also commented favorably on the terror attacks that we saw in Paris recently. So that's quite an interesting development there, and it came against a backdrop of mounting concern here in Italy about the possibility of Italy being struck by terror attacks like the kind that we've seen in France, Belgium and the UK.
Has that concern resulted in any Italian government reaction?
Well, over the last few months, there has been concern in Italy about the attacks that we've seen recently in France and Germany. And the government is really concerned that we may see attacks here. We've seen a very serious increase in security at major sites here in Rome, for example, at the Colosseum and surrounding the Vatican. The government is looking at setting up a task force to seek out potential Islamic terrorists. And this commission or committee is expected to be set up in September. A group of experts will have the task of drawing up a profile of potential terrorists and possible countermeasures that might be effective in heading off any kind of activities or potential terrorism before it actually happens.
Have there been any other reports of problems between Italian residents and migrants?
While we haven't seen any particular incidents in the last few weeks, there is concern in some local communities that their influx of migrants is really now beyond control and that they can't deal with the numbers in their local communities. So we've had some complaints from local councils, from individual mayors, but as for individual or particular incidents of violence, we haven't really seen too much of that in the last few weeks.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome. She spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to The Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information. Democracy in action. That's what the U.S. presidential election is all about. Who's going to be the new president of the United States come November 8th? Tune in to VOA's coverage of the 2016 presidential election. Reports, expert analysis, and more. Professional, up-to-the-minute coverage that can't be found anywhere else. Right here on VOA.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here, only the best on VOA Africa.
VOAAfrica.com. On voaafrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
voaafrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.
Africa.